My dear brothers and sisters, and sons and daughters in the Lord, the subject of my talk tonight is the Divine Musician. From the earliest of times, music has played an important part in people's lives. The ancient Chinese thought music had an ethical power. The Egyptians used music for worship and also considered it a part of education. Music is used in the ceremonies of almost every religion. Pythagoras, the great philosopher as mystic of ancient Greece, taught his followers that music had an esoteric side and made its mysteries known to them. According to Greek legend, Orpheus used music to tame wild animals, which is symbolic of the taming of the ape in man, or his carnal desires. Amphion, the son of Zeus, is said to have built the city of Thebes with the music of his lute. It was so melodious that the stones themselves danced into the walls and houses. Music accompanies the major events in our life, graduations, weddings, and funerals. Nations have anthem and marching music. Music uplifts and inspires. If our instrumental and vocal music have such power, you can very well imagine how enchanting would be the music of God, known as the harmony of harmonies, or celestial music, or audible life stream. Our worldly music continues so long as our fingers go on touching the strings, or our vocal cords continue to vibrate. But the music of God reverberates for all time to come. The music which God commenced in the beginning of creation is unstruck and unending. All religions make reference to this divine music. Saints tell us that in the beginning God was all alone. Then he thought of becoming many from one. This thought produced a vibration, and he assumed two forms, two manifestations. That of light of God and the music of the spheres. Both of them combined are known as the holy word, of which reference is made in the Bible. In the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. That word was the main creative force, and through it all the spiritual regions of the creation, the physical universes, the spiritual regions, and the 8.4 billion species of life came into existence. The Hindu scriptures call this music north. The Buddhists call it sonorous light. One of the bodhisattvas addressing Lord Buddha said, "I was taught to begin practicing by concentrating my mind on the true nature of transcendental hearing, and by that practice I attained samadhi." The Zoroastrians call it Shrosha. The Sikhs call it Naam or Shabd. The ancient Greeks call it Logos. The Chinese call it Tao. The Muslim Sufis call it Sauta Sarmadi. The Theosophical Society calls it the Voice of Silence. They are the various words used to describe the same creative power of God, which is the Holy Word. Pythagoras has said that God Himself is supreme music. It is this music, or the Holy Word, that had brought about all creation and enlivens and sustains us. All saints, seers and prophets have been telling us that it is only by coming in contact with the light of God and music of the spheres that our soul can return to its source and attain communion with God. Scientists are telling us that within the nucleus of an atom there is music and light. A few years ago, one of the Nobel Prize winners in the field of physics proposed a grand unified theory. It states that the universe originated from light, and after trillions of years, the universe will return to light. I'm often asked, how can we hear the celestial music? This divine melody is constantly reverberating within us. We have been unable to hear it because our attention, which is the outer expression of the soul, is attracted to the world outside. The soul, which originally was supposed to be in control of the mind and the senses, has become identified with them. The senses are attracted by outer enjoyments of sight, sound, smell, taste and touch. To hear the divine melody within, we must invert our attention from world outside and focus it at the higher seat of the soul in the body. And this higher seat of the soul in the body is called the third or the single eye. And it has come in the Holy Bible, "If then I be single, the whole body shall be full of light." Just as there are masters of outer music, there are masters of the inner music. They have been known to us as saints, seers, prophets. They are in reality the divine musicians. The music maestros who have become one with the inner music. They tell us that to contact the celestial music within, we should concentrate at a point in the body known as the third or the single eye, which is located behind the two eyebrows. It has also been referred to as the Divya Chakshu and Shiv Netra in the Indian scriptures. Nuktaya Saveda by the Sufis and is also called the tenth door in the Sikh scriptures. The Master helps us to become attuned to the music within, unless we have his assistance. We remain deaf to the holy word. I am often asked why there is so much emphasis on the need for a spiritual teacher. I point out that we readily accept the need for a teacher in all spheres of our life. Although there are vast libraries at our disposal, we send our children to school to learn from teachers. If we wish to become a doctor, we seek to study with someone who has mastered the field of medicine. Similarly, if we wish to become an accomplished musician in this world, we always try to find a master musician to study with. If this is the case with worldly subjects and outer music, how much more important is it to find a master of the inner music, a divine musician? Because he himself has become fully attuned with the holy word, he is an embodiment of the word. He can teach us how to contact that divine power of God within ourselves. At a time of initiation, we receive a first-hand experience of the light of God and music of the spheres. He teaches us how to withdraw our attention from the world outside and the body below. This process is known as meditation. And meditation is nothing but complete concentration. The Masters give us charge names whose reputation helps us concentrate our attention as a third or the single eye. These names are repeated not by our physical tongue, but mentally, through the tongue of thought. We often recite our hymns, but we find that whereas our physical tongue is repeating the hymns, our mind is running amok. And the basis of spirituality is to still our body and to still our mind also. These names are repeated not by our physical tongue, but mentally. Because normally this becomes a mechanical process. Our tongue goes on repeating the holy names, but our mind, it goes from the Louvre in Paris to the pyramids and then to our official difficulties and our household problems, so on and so forth. And the only way we can have the full benefits of our meditation is to repeat the holy names of God, not by our tongue, but our mind. These names help keep our mind from wandering. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second. But the speed of our mind is still greater. In a split second it is here, in the next it is on Mars or Jupiter. The next moment it is in Washington or Moscow or the lover's lane of Paris. Then to our domestic troubles or to our office. So the mental repetition of these names helps us to still our mind. When we sit in meditation and our attention is focused at the eye center, we begin to see light of God in some form. We see various colors such as purple or red, blue, violet, indigo, green, orange or golden light. Then we may see the sky with a firmament studded with stars. If we concentrate our attention in the middle of what is before us, we rise above body consciousness. We pass through the stars, the moon and the sun until we come face to face with the radiant form of the divine musician within. From now on he serves as our guide and companion through the inner journey. He takes us through the astral, causal and supracausal regions until we return to our eternal home, Sachkhand, our Mukam-e-Haq, as called by the Sufis. By merging in the Creator, we experience eternal bliss, peace and tranquility. It is only by receiving a first-hand experience of the light and music of the spheres that our soul can have communion with God. The first practice of looking within and repeating the names is known as Simran. The second practice, where one listens to the inner music, is known as Bhajan. We may hear the music of the bell, the flute, the conch or shofar, and other musical instruments. We may also hear the sound of thunder, waterfalls, or the striking of sea waves on the shore. If you concentrate on these inner sounds, they'll take us to higher spiritual regions. We must close the outer ears and concentrate on our inner faculty of hearing if we wish to contact the Holy Word. Speaking of those who are unable to commune with the Holy Word, Christ said, "Their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed." Kabir has said, "Close down thine eyes, ears and mouth, and hear the unending melody of the Shabd," which means the Holy Word. This music not only brings a joy and bliss, but it makes us immortal. One is freed from the bondage of the physical body and conquers death. And it is said that death is the last enemy we have to conquer. That is why this process is often called dying while living. Saint Paul said, "I die daily." It is the same process we undergo at the time of death. Except that during meditation, the cerebral cord that connects the soul to the body is not broken, and the soul returns to the body. Death then holds no fear for us, because we have experienced it in life. Saints die many a times a day. They transcend the body and rise to the highest abode of God within the twinkling of an eye. Those who have a contact with the inner music need not fear death. Thomas of Kempis has said, "Learn to die so that you may begin to live." They gain immortality in this life. Christ called this power the water of life. Indeed, the holy word or Naam is the most precious gift one can receive in all the worlds. In this connection, there is a story of a Muslim mystic who was traveling to the desert with some companions. There they found an earthenware jar filled with gold and jewels. On the top of the jar was a tablet on which God's name was written. He kissed it and kept it by his side day and night. One day he had a vision in which God told him, "Your companion chose gold and jewels, but you chose my name, which is more precious than the jewels or anything else in both the worlds. Thus I'll open the door of knowledge and wisdom to you. All scriptures speak very highly of the human form. They call it the roof and crown of creation. Narayani they are ashraful makhlukat. Because it is only in this form that we can merge in God. It is said in the scriptures that when man was created, even the angels were asked to bow down to man. Because if angels want to have eternal salvation and oneness with God, they have to also to come in the human body. We are now micro-gods. And by communion with the Holy Word, we can attain Godhood. This is a process of evolution and can become conscious co-workers of the divine plan. The Lord is eager for us to return to Him. He called to us through His celestial harmony. Tulsi Sahib has said, "There comes a perpetual call from afar, calling thee back to thine own home." Just as romantic music or love songs invoke in us a remembrance and longing for our earthly beloved, so does inner music awaken in us a longing and a remembrance for our eternal beloved, our true spouse. It is the supreme musician who serenades us. Seeing the helpless condition of his lovers, God sends saints and masters to awaken humanity. They are the divine musicians who help us become attuned to the celestial melody so that we can return to our source. The saints and masters remind us of our divinity and give us a contact with the holy world so we can return home. Once we experience the inner harmony, our taste for the outer sounds and sights diminishes. Contact with the Naam or word purifies the soul and makes one fit to enter God's kingdom. It has come in the Holy Bible, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." While the Master starts us on our journey on the day of initiation, in order to progress further, we must practice meditation and also lead ethical lives. We must develop non-violence, truthfulness, chastity, humility, love for all, and selfless service. Right living is a stepping stone to spirituality. To achieve it, we need to discipline ourselves. In order to accomplish excellence in any field, we have to review our performance regularly. If we study the lives of great people, we'll find that they have derived much benefit from introspection. Many have even kept a daily diary for this purpose. The Persian Sufi Khaja Hafiz kept an earthenware pitcher by his side. Every time he had a lapse in ethical living, he dropped a pebble in that pitcher. After a few days, he was shocked to find the pitcher was filled. Saint Ignatius Loyola and Benjamin Franklin both used diaries for self-improvement. But the most scientific diary was developed by our beloved master, Sant Kripal Singh Ji Maharaj. Since our purpose is to weed out our failings, we use a system of negative markings. I learned this system from one of our professors, J.D. Ward, who came to us from Oxford. He took our first test in history, and he marked the papers, and when he announced the marks, I would generally stand first in the class. He announced only 7 marks for me. And for all the people who were brilliant, the students, they got 11 marks, 12 marks, 13 marks. And all those friends who were having the best of the life in the extramural activities are spheres beyond study, they got 40 marks, 42 marks. So, you know, as he announced these marks, our faces fell and we start perspiring, you know. But at the end of the announcement of marks, he asked us not to worry. And he told us that he was using the system of negative markings which he had learned in Germany. So here also, while filling up our diaries, we have to use that system of negative markings. And incidentally, I stood first in that test. But the most scientific diary was developed by our beloved master, Sant Kripal Singh Ji. At the end of each day, we record our failures in thought, word and deed in respect of the cardinal virtues. Once we begin keeping such a diary, we learn to recognize our weaknesses and failings. Then we progressively weed them out. If we were to maintain this diary in a sincere and accurate manner for even 6 months, it would profoundly change us, and we'll ourselves feel a change in our lives. The sixth scripture says that unless I see with my own eyes, I will not even believe my teacher. It often happens that our spiritual teachers tell us, "You are very much advanced in your meditations, but unless we find and experience a change ourselves, we should not believe even what our spiritual teacher tells us, because self-experience is the best experience. And if we are really advanced, then we should have a gradual change for the betterment in the various spheres of non-violence, truthfulness, chastity, humility and selfless service. Then we should be very cool and patient, and we should have love for one and all. And that is the real touchstone of finding out whether we are really progressing on the path. And along with it, we should have higher and higher experience, both of the light of God and the music of the spheres." The discordant notes in our character would give way to greater harmony within our own selves and in dealing with others. We must practice our meditations. The more we come in contact with the Holy Word, the more our failings are washed away and we are purified. In the worldly sphere, we beautify ourselves when we are about to meet our earthly beloved. We always prepare a face to meet other faces, and we try to remove all the scars on our face, and we even go sometimes to a beauty clinic to prepare a face to meet our beloved. How much more beautified, how much more beautiful must we be to meet our eternal beloved? Contact with the music of the spheres is given as a free gift to all. A true saint does not accept any fee for his spiritual teachings. Instead, he lives on his own earnings. To gain contact with the Word does not require one to leave one's religion and convert to another. People often ask me if I believe in conversion. I tell them, we do not believe in conversion. We believe only in inversion. Inversion means inverting our senses from the outer world to the inner spheres, our realms of spirituality and consciousness. Spirituality is a science and not a dogma. To perform experiment, we need only get instruction from a competent teacher. If they are followed correctly, one is bound to get the results. The path the master teaches is that of which I term positive mysticism. We must fulfill all our obligations to our family, community, our nation, and the world at large. And ultimately, at the cosmic level, we must earn our livelihood honestly and perform our duties to the best of our ability. At the same time, we perform our spiritual practices and lead an ethical life. We have to be like the swan that swims in water but flies with dry wings. We live in the world but are not of it. We believe in having the best of both the worlds. On the one hand, we fulfill our obligations to our parents, to our families, to our community, to our nation, and then at the international and cosmic level. But at the same time, while doing so, we always keep an eye on the be-all and end-all of the human life, which is self-knowledge and God-realization. And we believe in having the best of both the worlds. Contact with inner music serves to provide us with inspiration and intuition, even in the outer world. Real art is a product of intuition or revelation, and that is the gift of God. What an artist or musician presents to the world is a reflection of the eternal music. The outer music, in fact, is a reflection of the inner music. The greatest Western composer, Beethoven, was once told that one of his new compositions was so awkwardly written that it was virtually unplayable. He was unperturbed and replied, "When I composed that, I was conscious of being inspired by God Almighty." He was far ahead of his times and his generation, and time proved in due course that he was right. If the arts are moving, it is because they are divinely inspired. True art comes from our heart and soul and goes directly into the hearts and souls of the listeners. One of my own verses is, "Dil se nikal ke har sada, kyun na dilon mein doob jaye, saaz mera latif hai, nagma tera latif tar." Why should the words coming from the core of my heart not move the hearts of the listeners? My instrument may be humble, but the music which flows through it is divine, and that music that harmony of harmonies, that celestial music, are that divine melody. It is a gift of a perfect master who has solved the mystery of life and death and attained oneness with God. And since God is music, every word coming out of the mouth is full of musical notes. There are five arts: music, poetry, painting, sculpture, and dancing. And it is said that music is the highest of all the arts. It is a reflection of the divine harmony. Once we reach God, the source of the eternal music, we see that it is He who is conducting the universal orchestra of life. We begin to recognize that we are all individual notes in a divine symphony. A musician in an orchestra recognizes the importance of the music played by other musicians partaking in it. Similarly, we begin to have love and regard for all other forms of creation as parts of the grand harmony of life. Once we have this realization, we are then in harmony not only with the divine music but with one another. The world is in a state of strife. It is only love that can save us and bring about peace. Contact with inner music can lead us to our true home. It is only at that stage we begin to see the light of God reflected in all. We see it in every bud, in every flower, and even in every thorn. Besides, human beings, animals, birds, reptiles, and other forms of vegetation. It is when we reach that stage that we develop love and compassion for all, and that we serve all as children of the same Father. It is only at that stage that we can claim that we live in the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. And at that stage, peace and goodwill will reign on earth. We will no longer function as solo players, but will become members of the grand orchestra of life. I would like to end with one of my own verses. Tera nagma nuro bedari ka ek paigam hai, aur ye paigam kul insaniyat ke naam hai. Your music is a message of light and spiritual awakening. Its melody is bent for all humanity. Thank you.